from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dan Brecke in today for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, Tom Dalzell has spent the last several years walking the streets of Berkeley, discovering and documenting how residents have put a joyfully creative stamp on their home and yards and helped give the city its free-spirited reputation. In his new book, Quirky Berkeley, he shares some of his most striking finds, from beach trash that's been turned into sculpture to a house that looks like a fish. In this hour of Forum, we talk with Dalzell about these creations and about the people who have given them to the community. And we want to hear from you. What quirks make you love your neighborhood? That's next on Forum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dan Brecke, in for Michael Krasny on today's Forum. Tom Dalzell worked as a teenage organizer for the United Farm Workers, passed the California bar without attending law school, and made a name for himself as an authority on American slang. Then, 5 years ago, a happenstance led to a life-threatening illness and a determination to take a closer, more appreciative look at the world around him. Began walking the streets of his adopted hometown, Berkeley, all the streets. What he found there was a kind of citywide celebration of life and creativity. Dalzell's journey of discovery resulted first in a blog and then this year in a book, Quirky Berkeley. We're going to spend this hour exploring the world Dalzell found on Berkeley's streets and in other Bay Area communities. And we want to hear from you. What are the hidden treasures in your neighborhood that make you love the place you live? Call us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Tom Dalzell joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thanks. Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing quirky.
That's the daily reality. Well, I mean, I alluded to it in the introduction. Tell us about the genesis of Quirky Berkeley and this journey you're on.
Well, I've lived in Berkeley since 1984, and I've loved it. I've raised four children there. And 5 years ago, as you mentioned, a scratch on my elbow turned into an undiagnosed strep infection that went septic and put me in Altabates, almost dead. And I came out of 6 days in critical care there with a renewed passion about life, about my work for IBW Local 1245, about girls soccer, about Berkeley. And I set out a few months after getting out of the hospital to walk every block of every street of Berkeley, photographing and cataloging the quirky material culture that I saw.
Material culture, define that.
Stuff. It can be art. It can be bowling balls. It can be garden gnomes. It can be architecture.
Do have some rules, though. I mean, what if I have an interesting hedge?
Well, I've done one blog on quirky gardens, and I'm fortunately the appeals committee on what is quirky and what gets in is one man, and that's me. And so I make the rules and I break them when I want to. But I have a whole blog on topiary, and not just your run of the mill, but you know, a giraffe and a bunny on Ward Street, and a squirrel on Carlton, and a racing
car. So you're
a
collector nonpareil, then. I mean, you're peerless in your pursuit of the strange and wonderful.
Yes, yes.
And you're a word guy. You just told me that you've written a dozen books on slang,
yes.
Various aspects of slang. I may have made it too narrow by saying American slang. Tell us what quirky means to you.
Well, quirky, first of all, means to me a word that almost rhymes with Berkeley. And so it's handy. And it's not the perfect word for what I look for other than the fact that it rhymes with Berkeley. You know, I reject the stereotype of Berkeley or the People's Republic of Berkeley or the tie-dye. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about creative, eccentric, whimsical, unexpected stuff that we have in our yards and our lawns and on our porches and on our houses.
And, you know, I mean, we're talking in sort of abstract terms about some of the things that you have seen and recorded and documented and explored. Give me a couple of your all-time favorites, things that just warm you when you're just sitting here talking to us.
Well, my single favorite is at 722 Spruce Street, about halfway up the hill, a couple blocks above Marin, and it is a giant orange. Bruce Dodd is a retired architect. He owns Fox Court on University. Lovely collection of
down there near Sacramento and
yeah,
University.
Yeah, it's a lovely collection of sort of I'm in the north of England, 1920 little cottage apartments.
Right.
But he lives up on Spruce Street, and as he vacationed over in Yosemite, driving back and forth, would see the disappearing giant oranges on 99.
And what were these giant oranges? What were they doing out there?
In the days before air conditioning, you're out for a drive with your family and it's hot and you pull over and park under a tree and there's a building, roadside vernacular, a building, usually one-offs, shaped like an orange, and you have some orange juice on shaved ice and then get on the way with the family. And there's still one in Dixon. You can see it's on the right side as you drive up to Sacramento. Bruce found one in Corcoran. He brought it up. He lovingly restored it. It was made by the Merced Ironworks. And he just got it in his driveway there on Spruce Street. And I love it because it shows his appreciation for what Greil Marcus would call old, weird America.
And what's old weird America? Tell us about that.
Well, it's America before we became so corporate. Before everything was a chain. It was an America where diversity of thought and culture thrived.
Right, and even in Berkeley, I guess I want to go into this a little bit more later. I mean, maybe it's always in question whether that's under threat. But I mean, certainly there was resistance to things in the past. Chain stores or chain fast food joints like McDonald's. And McDonald's has been out at Shattuck and University now for decades.
Yes.
You know, reading your book, which is quite a lovely little volume and highly recommended, and reading your blog, quirkyberkeley.com. I mean, you're more than just a guy walking around, you know, taking notes on what he sees. I mean, I was struck by the anthropology there. I mean, the curatorial work you're doing, and you even see you have a documentarian or journalist bent. And one of the things that is really striking to me, you're not just looking at the objects. You're not just a few gnomes or bowling balls or this orange. You've discovered people. And for me, anyway, that's one of the things that makes the book and your blog come alive, because we find out about the stories behind these wonderful things that face the street.
Well, thank you. And for that, I thank Francis Dinkelspiel from Berkeleyside, because when I started blogging, I was only writing about the things, and I was going to leave a taxonomy of the odd folk of Berkeley to somebody else. But Frances, when she and I talked about running some Quirky Berkeley in Berkeleyside, said, go talk to the people. And that has been a complete joy. The first of these artists that I talked to was Stan Hunselman, who lives on Fifth Street. And you're sort of walking quietly down the street and you see a big sign for the Berkeley Bullfighting Academy. and a big sign saying Valkyries do samba and some strange sculpture. And I was taking pictures, and Stan came out with his dog, Motor, and asked me what I was doing. And I told him, and he embraced me. And 2 minutes later, we're back in his studio, and he's showing me the shopping cart in which he set the world land speed record for motorized shopping carts. He's an example. Jane Norling on King, she had painted a mural in Balmy Alley in San Francisco. And when that was being torn down, she brought it back plank by plank and has it in her front yard. And I had a camera up over her fence taking pictures. She came out and find out what I was doing. Best friends.
I'm going to get to another site that I found on your blog. But first, I want to remind people we're talking about Quirky Berkeley with Tom Delzell, author of a book by the same name. And we'd like to hear about the treasures in your neighborhood, in your community. Call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And I'm going to go to Noah right now, who's on the line from Riverside.
Hello. So I grew up in Berkeley. I'm a student now at UC Riverside, but I just wanted to make a comment about this awesome little community project that some people may have noticed right near the North Branch Library where I grew up at the intersection of Hopkins, Sonoma, and Josephine Street. There's this small xeriscape garden that I remember as a young kid working with my mom and other neighbors to take this, what was just an empty triangle of asphalt, and tearing it up, putting in dirt and a curb, and then planting a bunch of drought-tolerant native plants. And this was, it must have been somewhere around the turn of the century, 2001, because I remember going to a candlelight vigil at this spot on the night after
9/11,
2001. Yeah,
yeah, I know the spot well. Tom, what's your historical cultural perspective on this spot?
Well, that spot is one of several where neighbors have taken civic action and done what the city has chosen not to do or could not afford to do. I mean, the bear fountain in the circle.
Marin
Circle is an example. But you get over to South Berkeley and you see some great traffic circles where the neighbors have planted and there's a completely mosaiced car in one of them.
And these are in intersections where the city has put up traffic diverters or roundabouts that people have sort of taken over and turned into projects.
All along Ashby, probably six blocks along Ashby, there are traffic barriers,
right,
north-south, and the neighbors have mosaicked them and tiled them. I've done a blog on that, but they might not be the quirkiest thing, but it's people putting their fingerprints onto their city.
Okay, so we're about to be joined by someone you do one of your mini profiles in. That's Doug Heine, who, if you don't know who Doug Heine is, you may know where he hangs out and does his work, because there looks like there's an airplane crashed into his house. Doug, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
So how does it feel to be quirky?
Well, that's a good question. I love Berkeley on that level because Tom uses the word quirky. I often use the word goofy. As goofy as I feel like being, I can walk out of my studio and find 10 people that are a little bit more strange than I am. And so this gives you a sense of freedom. You can make anything, and somebody will either appreciate it or not appreciate it, but nobody will tell you to tear it down. Because, I don't know, it is the state of Berkeley.
Well, I happen to know where you are. You've got an XO and an XO and an OO there. How long have you been in Berkeley?
40 years.
And what brought you to Berkeley in the first place? Was it, I mean, were you drawn to some sense that you were going through the looking glass, that leaving behind black and white Kansas and emerging into Technicolor Oz?
Well, in a sense, it's a little embarrassing, but I got here for the same reason. Man Ray was interviewed one time, and the interviewer said, now, you've done photography, you've done sculpture, you've done painting. What is it you remember the most? And he didn't hesitate. He said, it was the women. I came down to Berkeley to buy tickets. I lived in Vallejo. I worked in the shipyard at Mare Island to see Bill Cosby. And a friend and I were sitting on the Sproul steps watching all the beautiful co-eds walk by. And I said to him, I'm going to put in an application here, and I'm going to get a job as a plumber. And I'm going to work at night in the women's dorms, and I'm going to go to school during the day. And he said, well, you can't be a plumber. And I said, look, I'm a pipe fitter by training. I'm building reactor plants and nuclear submarines. I can definitely do this. So I went back to the shipyard, and I went through all the shops, and I made 3 pages of a listing of machinery and techniques that I could do, which, of course, was a lie. And I put the application in, and 3 months later, I got a call from the Space Science Lab at UC and got an interview for Luis Alvarez, who was a Nobel laureate that was going to start studying cosmic particles from high-altitude balloons. And in the conversation, the engineer said to me, well, do you think you could make a balloon gondola? And I said, well, I have to be honest. I've never worked with wicker. And he laughed and said, well, no, these balloon gondolas are going to be, one will be 50 feet tall. It'll be made out of aluminum. It'll have superconducting magnet. And I said, well, that sounds quite interesting. And he said, well, you know, we've interviewed a lot of people and nobody seems to know how to do this. Would you be interested in it? So I took the job and I worked for astrophysics for 12 years making balloon gondolas and other scientific experiments. But that got me to Berkeley. But back to Man Ray, and initially it was the women that did the attraction.
Well, here's another question that must be asked is the sight of the airplane. It's the tail of the airplane, actually, the rear of the fuselage and the tail projecting up at an alarming angle from this roof in West Berkeley. It's an arresting sight. What inspired that?
You know, I've been wondering about that myself. At that period, I made 5 large sculptures. 2 of them are in the city of Orinda. One is 20 feet tall and has butterflies on it. One of them is kind of a pun. It's a tree with brightly colored discs on it, and it's called Fruit of the Aluminum. And then I made a big red bird, and I Sarita Waite, that owns Temescal Alley in Oakland, purchased that. And I think that bird kind of got something going about flight, and it's a bizarre idea, and it makes no sense, and it can be considered quite silly, but I don't know. Someone said life's a joke, but art is serious, and so I take that kind of thing very serious in that we should have a good time with what we do.
Right.
Interestingly enough, the man is building 4 new houses across the street. And he's asked me if I would build the other half of the airplane coming up out of the ground and crashing into his houses. Now, whether that'll come to pass or not, I don't know, but I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'll be fun.
Okay, Doug Heine, West Berkeley artist and quirk extraordinaire, thank you very much for joining us. And we're going to go now to Marcia Donahue, who is another one of the guiding lights and moving spirits of quirky Berkeley, as documented by author Tom Delzell, who's with us. Marcia, good morning.
Good morning to you.
She's the spiritual center of quirky Berkeley. She's not a guiding force. She is the spiritual center of quirky Berkeley.
Tom, describe her work.
It defies description. She has been gardening at her house on Wheeler Street for 38 years.
And Wheeler Street's in South Berkeley.
Yes. It's a few blocks east of Shattuck, just off of Ashby. And her garden would be sufficient in and of itself, but she is a really gifted artist working these days in ceramic. Her garden, it's hard to tell sometimes whether you're looking at an exotic plant from Australia or a Marcia Donahue Bambusa ceramica. Or are those really succulents or are those ceramic succulents? And there are gnats and there are malas. They're inspired by or informed by Burmese Buddhism. It is the Notre Dame of Berkeley.
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Marcia, okay, so you've constructed the Notre Dame of Berkeley, and you are the spiritual center of quirky Berkeley. I guess, how does that feel? But seriously, describe your work in your own words, and how has it evolved to the point that Tom just described?
First, let me say thanks, Tom. I'm basking in your positive regard. Now, these are his words, not mine. I am amusing myself and sharing that with others. That's what I'm doing. I'm exploring materials and the living world and life here in my garden. So I do sculpture. I've worked in many media over the years. I've been doing this since I was a child. But when I moved into this house 38 years ago, I had a place, you know, an outdoor place to regard really as a large sculpture. I think gardening is weaving, is sculpture, and is an incredible joy that gives back more than you put into it. So that, in general terms, is what I'm doing.
You know, I want to read a few listener comments we've gotten. You know, this is something that touches people in Berkeley, and I hope if you're listening outside of the borders of the People's Republic that this strikes a chord for you, that we all have, you know, things that we love, that that we live among. First, I want to read from Trish. The sculptures along the Emeryville Flats provided years of enjoyment for travelers headed toward the Bay Bridge. How I miss that. Tom, you know about these sculptures?
Yeah.
Snoopy
I
and the rest?
Well, actually, yeah.
Oh, you know what? We're talking about the Emeryville mud flats, and we're going to have to take a break at this point. we'll continue. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to get the answer when you come back. We'll continue our conversation about quirky Berkeley, the exuberant material culture of the Athens of the West. What questions do you have for our guests? What favorite quirk does your neighborhood feature? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Dan Brecke, and for Michael Krasny, and you're listening to KQED Public Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dan Brecke, in today for Michael Krasny. We're talking with Tom Dalzell, author of Quirky Berkeley, a celebration of Berkeley's idiosyncratic material culture. And we want to hear from you. What's a quirky piece of architecture or landscape or just something fun in your neighborhood that you know and love? Please give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. I want to go back to Marcia Donahue, who's on the phone with us from Berkeley, one of the artists featured in Tom Dalzell's Quirky Berkeley. Marcia, there's one thing that's a little bit different about your garden. You actually open it up to the public. Why did you decide to do that?
I decided to do it for many reasons, one of which it's an anti-ivory tower device. I work alone. I make things in a studio by myself. And this is a way, having people over, to not only show my work, but meet them and interact. As a gardener, a lot of people also wanted to know more about gardening, and it's a way of paying back all the people whose gardens and themselves have taught me. So I'm passing on knowledge.
Have you ever encountered somebody who said, oh, this really inspires me, and you know they've gone on to do something themselves?
People frequently say that to me. They say, oh, I've got to go now. I'm so inspired. I've got to go to my own backyard. And that's my favorite thing, my favorite response. It feels like I have actually something to offer instead of just, playing around by myself. And it's a contribution I have to make. So I do know that people have felt a little spark and felt, well, if she could do it, so could I.
Well, Marcia Donahue, thanks so much for joining us this morning. And Marcia Donahue is a South Berkeley artist who's featured in Tom Delzell's Quirky Berkeley. Tom, I want to go back to a question that came in or a comment just before the break. The sculptures along the Emeryville Flats provided years of enjoyment for travelers headed toward the Bay Bridge. How I miss that. That's from Trish. And, you know, I think of a couple of things. All the flotsam and jetsam that gets washed up in the normal course of events along the bay was turned into these wonderful impromptu sculptures. Have you documented this at all?
Yeah, I've blogged on the Emeryville mud flats. You know, there was a decision made based on environmental reasons in the 1980s to stop all the foot traffic and the possible leaching of chemicals into the wetlands. It was beautiful. There still are a few airplanes out there. Tyler Orr, H-O-A-R-E, a silent H, was the original Snoopy artist, and he's still got a couple planes on a pier in Emeryville. There still is a Snoopy on a pier. There's Albany Bulb.
Right.
Not Berkeley, but neither is Emeryville. I had a really nice walk out at the Albany Bulb probably in August, and a lot of that has been dismantled. But one other thing, you mentioned all the flotsam and jetsam. There's an artist in Berkeley by the name of Mark Olivier. He lives on Colusa Street, and every Saturday morning he goes out with a buddy and a couple dogs and picks up plastic, takes it home, and makes incredible sculptures out of Bic lighters and wiffle balls and rope. And he has them in front of his house on Colusa, right about at Monterey. So that is a repurposing of the tremendous amount of plastic we throw away.
Well, and these aren't like little miniatures or something. He's got some grand creations.
Yeah, Sweet Babu, the elephant, is probably 5 feet tall, and
doesn't he have Winged Victory out there, or he's done something on that?
Yeah, using baseball caps and shredded automobile tires, recreated the Winged Victory of Nike of Thrace, which is now around the corner on Tulare. But that's a 7 foot sculpture recreating 2nd century BC marble work in the Louvre.
Okay, we've got a bunch of calls lined up. Bill from Sacramento, join us.
Hi, this is Bill. This is great. It was the mud. I called about the mudflat sculptures, which you've already talked about, which I love. I grew up in Chicago, and I was drawn to Berkeley after I finished school like a magnet. I came straight to Berkeley and lived there for a while, and I've never left Northern California. But not only the mudflat sculptures, which I love, but over off of Upper Hearst, there's the little hobbit houses that were of the Lord of the Rings vintage. Over off, I think it's off of San Pablo, there's the television house that has like dozens and dozens of televisions mounted all over the front of the house. And I thought those were a couple of items that I just wanted to bring up that illustrate the topic that you're under. But the last memory I wanted to touch on from the late 60s and early 70s when I first came out was all the hitchhikers down on Lower University. And I always remember, and they would be sitting by on the curbs with signs. One would go north, one would go south, or they'd say Seattle. And one guy just had a sign that said anywhere.
An example of nomad culture.
Yeah. Hey. So those are just some of the nostalgic things from my early Berkeley days.
All right, Bill from Sacramento, thanks for your call. And we're going to go to Amelia in Oakland.
So glad you're having this. Hi, it's Amelia in Oakland. Glad you're having this show. Good morning. There are two masters of quirk that deserve some celebration. One is Mike Da Silva, the master ukulele luthier, who has a wizard's lab in a warehouse on one of the numbered streets in West Berkeley near Dwight. And you go in there, and he's got all kinds of instruments in all kinds of states of creation. He has a little stage, provides talent to entertain folks, and occasionally classes. And, of course, the ukulele is not only one of the key instruments in Hawaiian music. It's also the gateway drug for folks who want to learn to play a stringed instrument and a great fallback option for incompetent guitarists like me.
I love the description of a gateway drug. Tom, you know about Mike Da Silva's ukulele manufacturing joint in the Wizard Shop.
I'm going to go find it. Thank you.
Okay.
I can tell you how to find him. He will be open for whatever open studios there are, and he can put you on his email list so you'll know about the shows and workshops. And another shout-out to a UC Berkeley Space Sciences Lab alumnus, current senior scientist, John Valerga, who was the guy who thought up the LED displays on the Bay Bridge.
Great.
Hey, Amelia, thank you very much for that call. And now we're going to go to Namood in Berkeley with a little bit of West Berkeley intelligence.
Hello?
Oh, Namood.
Hey, how are you doing, guys? So one quirky thing in my neighborhood, that's from West Berkeley, at San Pablo and University, that is a furniture store. And in front of the store, they put that huge chair looking like a throne and there is a big stuffed animal on it, and they wrote Dumb Trump, and I thought that's really funny. Another quirky thing that I seen also, it's on South Berkeley on Shattuck and Woolsey. I think there is a muffler shop, and they welded together, made like a cowboy playing golf and stuff out of mufflers and exhaust, and I think it was really nice.
Okay, Namood, thank you very much for that call. Tom.
Yeah, he's talking about Ron's Berkeley Muffler Shop, and I've blogged on that. It's a lovely place, and it's all the more quirky. It's all the more quirky Berkeley because it's not in Berkeley. It's a Ron's Berkeley Muffler Shop, but it's slightly into Oakland. And in the old days, you saw people in muffler shops making robots or tin men out front to show their craft. And that's what we see at Ron's. You also see it down at Mork Sheet Metal. If you look down there, up on the roof, there are a couple of gargoyles.
And where's that?
That's on 6th Street, just north of Dwight.
All right.
It's a fourth generation Finlander sheet metal shop where the fourth generation, Melissa Mork, said, well, instead of making duct, I'm going to make a gargoyle and put it up on the roof. It's pretty good.
That's awesome. And I think we're going to go to Anna in Oakland, who wants to point out a piece of Berkeley behavior that she thinks is quirky.
Well, I've been picking up casual carpoolers since the carpooling lane was free. And I've picked up people from Alameda and Oakland in several different places, and they always contribute $1 per person to help me with the tolls, but in Berkeley, never. So I think that qualifies as quirky.
The withholding of $1? Listen, I know there's a big debate about that, and we should probably have a whole show on whether or not to contribute the dollar, and I'm sure we would be crowded with calls. Anna, thank you very much for the call. And I've got a little bit more quirk observations from our listeners. Rick writes, I sold a house in Brisbane, 6 years ago, and discovered this wonderful city on a cliff. I have lived in the Bay Area since 1962 and driven by this artful city without realizing that it even existed. It is universally friendly from old to young, from building department to grocery store. It feels like a small town that is scraped from the past, and yet it is just a few minutes from San Francisco. So Brisbane, which a lot of people would think of at the end of the runway to San Francisco International Airport. Paul writes from Sebastopol, I'm a 50-year-old resident of Berkeley who is lucky enough to make regular trips to Sebastopol, the home of dozens of front yard junk sculptures by Patrick Amiot. There's even one of his wild characters, a giant dog, living on Vassar Avenue in Berkeley. Or maybe it's just across the city line in Kensington. Tom, that sounds like something you ought to know about.
Yeah, Patrick Amiot is a junk art sculptor in Sebastopol. I know of two works of his in Berkeley. The Vassar Avenue one, owned by Randy and Steve Herman, is in fact in Berkeley. It's a few houses away from Kensington. It's a big wolf, a very big wolf, probably 8 feet high. And then on Harper Street near Ashby Bart, Eni Green is a collector of all things dachshund. And she's got three or four or five Patrick Amiot dachshunds in her front yard, along with a couple thousand inside her house. In her front yard is, well, she has a doggy diner head.
Patrick Amiot.
And in addition to the Patrick Amiot, she has a Mark Bullwinkle gate. And I got to mention Mark Bullwinkle, a welder who's been an artist for 40 years, doing with a welding torch in his eye what Mexican artists do with papel picado. He has an incredible zany, manic sense of style. You find his work all over Berkeley, at the Home Depot and Target in Emeryville, a ton of his work. And just as Marcia Donahue's a spiritual center, he is the true north of quirky Berkeley.
Love it. And a question from Ted. Are bears quirky, like the ones at 2519 and 2521 College Avenue?
Bears are quirky. They are officially quirky, and I have a whole blog on bears. I have those bears. I think I have every bear in Berkeley.
Let's go to Lawrence in San Francisco. Lawrence, join us.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to give a quick vouch. I live in San Francisco, but I'm from Texas, and grew up in Houston, Texas, and then went to school in Austin. And I want to say that my sort of ability to acclimate to the quirkiness out here was based completely on some real gems in the city of Houston, the Montrose neighborhood and the Heights neighborhood, and then Austin in general, just a very quirky, weird little place. And so if you've never been, I suggest all Northern Californians give them a shot.
And give me an idea what's quirky. What's quirky there?
I think the biggest thing to me is that there's a people are just open to the idea of sort of a similar amount of public privately done but publicly visible art, sculptures, and just general sort of weirdness, turning junk into something a little more beautiful.
All right, thank you, Lawrence.
I think Houston, excuse me, was ground zero for yarn bombing too in the United States. We still have a little bit in Berkeley, not much.
Describe yarn bombing.
Yarn bombing is non-invasive application of yarn to some sort of a structure, a bike rack, a street sign, a here there sign at the Berkeley Oakland border, and it's colorful. It fades with the weather.
Right. Public spirited crocheting.
Non-invasive graffiti.
And I'm going to go to a call now from John in Santa Rosa. John, you're with us.
Yeah, yes, good morning. I'm a UC grad, late 80s, and I was just wondering what happened to some of the characters that might have been hanging out on Sproul Plaza, so to say, street artists. There was a poet I remember that would walk up and down the street. Are any of those people still around? And just something I want to point out, too. I love the fact about all the sculptures everywhere. I live in Sonoma County now, and there's a little bit of that going on in Sebastopol, which I like to see. So, but I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
John, thanks for that. You know, I wonder if he's talking about Julia Vinograd, the longtime Telegraph Avenue poet.
She's still wandering around, yes.
And quite a wonderful spirit.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of questions that sort of touch on whether Berkeley is changing. Ben writes, I love Berkeley, but things have really changed for the worse. The quirkiness has been replaced by luxury car-driving snobs patronizing overpriced boutique stores. The only fun people left are usually over 50. Good news for me. Oakland has taken over the fun quirkiness.
Well, yeah, Berkeley is changing, and it has always changed. You know, 100 years ago, we had the Boynton family wearing togas, living in the fresh air up at the Temple of the Wings, and we had Bernard Maybeck and Dorothea Lange taking photographs and Chiro Abada painting.
And this is a community you're talking about, Temple of the Wings, up there along Buena Vista Avenue.
Yeah, Nut Hill is what it was called.
Yeah. Nut Hill.
Yeah. And then we had bookstores and record stores on Telegraph and Slate and Anti-HUAC and The Barb. And it's always changing. But I take his point, because what shaped Berkeley in the past was a combination, was friction between the university, the constant innovation coming out of the university, students and professors, professionals in the hills, working class in the flats, and home prices are rising, but there's a fourth leg of that stool right now, and that's developers. And they have a tremendous amount of power in Berkeley. It's remarkable for a city that prides itself as progressive. It's a pretty mod dem or business Democrat agenda that is going strong with nothing sacred, including Holy Hill is not sacred. You know,
Holy Hill is a place where the Pacific School of Religion is,
yes.
It's a place just north of the UC Berkeley campus.
Right, a cluster of seminaries, and there's a developer that wants to buy 19 buildings, tear down 17, and put up some very pricey housing. So nothing is, not even Holy Hill is sacred.
Just a reminder, we're talking with Tom Dalzell, author of Quirky Berkeley. You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. And, you know, on your blog, I noticed you take field trips. You seem to openly acknowledge the fact that quirky stuff and incredibly inspiring stuff exists outside Berkeley. Do you have a couple favorites around the Bay Area?
Yeah, around the Bay Area. I did a couple down in San Jose. I'll mention one that I'm just absolutely in love with recently, and that is an artist by the name of Clayton Bailey. He lives in Port Costa, a lovely little town where anybody in their right mind would think about moving. And he has a museum in Crockett right across the street from CNH. And he has been making art for 50-some years. He was at the core of the nut art movement in the late 1960s, early 1970s. His museum has got a skeleton of Bigfoot, a lot of robots. It's quirk to the max, right there in Crockett, open on Saturdays and Sundays.
So the museum is open?
Yes, it is. The Clayton Bailey Museum. And that's, what, a 20-minute drive? And
yeah.
Go have a drink at Toots.
If the traffic's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go to Marcia in Berkeley. Marcia, join us. I apologize.
No problem. That's probably a Berkeley quirk, too. We like things to be pronounced right. When I first came to Berkeley in 1986, there was the best map of Berkeley, and I'm a geographer, and it actually was. It had beautiful, readable graphics. It showed the traffic barriers and the bike lanes, and so it really facilitated people walking and bicycling and knowing where they were. Unfortunately, it went out of print, and I would love to get it back again, because I think a lot of the things that people call quirks are the things that work.
You know, if you leave your contact information with one of our producers, I will try to track something down for you along those lines.
I actually called the cartographer, and I think his name was something like Albert Naaman. He'd moved out of state, and he told me that he still had the plates, but he wasn't making the map anymore. This was probably 15 or 20 years
okay.
ago.
Okay, all right.
But bring it back, absolutely. Let's bring Berkeley back, too. Things that work.
All right. Thank you for that call, Marcia. And I'm going to go now to Emily in Berkeley. Emily.
Hi. I moved to Berkeley 2 years ago from Chicago, and I'm really excited about this book because there's so much that I haven't really explored. But I just wanted to comment that one of my favorite things that I see walking around Berkeley are some of the modified vehicles, whether it's like a van that's very, very reminiscent of the 60s with murals and colorful paintings on the side, or that's painted to look like a cat or something, or like something that someone might be using as their home. I remember seeing like a 1970s or early 80s flatbed truck with like walls someone had built on it, and then in the back were French doors. So that's my comment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Emily. And I'm going to go to Chris in Berkeley. Chris in Berkeley has been waiting for a while. You're on.
Hi. I wanted to recommend a children's book. The name is The Big Orange Splot, and it's written by Daniel Pinkwater. It's about a street where all the houses are exactly the same until something quirky happens to one owner, and he completely changes the outside of his house and paints it all kinds of crazy colors. And eventually, everybody on the block changes every house to be nutty and crazy and whimsical. And it's not only delightful in terms of what you're talking about today, but, of course, all the people on the block become joyous and have a great, wonderful, creative time with their houses.
Thanks for that comment, Chris. And, you know, Tom, that reminds me of a house on Matthews Street in West Berkeley. Tell us about that one.
Well, Matthews Street is a sort of a conservative, working-class street, California bungalows. And in the late 1990s, an architect by the name of Eugene Sway built a house for his parents there. They were moving from Minneapolis. They were afraid of earthquakes and fire. He did a little research and decided that the tardigrade was the most indestructible animal in the universe, and he built a house. It's a segmented marine animal. He built a house built on the architecture of a tardigrade, and it sort of looks like a fish right in the middle of these California bungalows, and his parents moved in and loved it. Not a right angle to be seen in the entire house.
And it actually has a very practical, I mean, it's not just a whim. I mean, there's some real design in the apparent madness.
Yeah, it's fireproof, it's earthquake-proof, it's pest-proof, it's flood-proof. You know, it's hard to hang a picture on the wall because there's no flat surfaces, but there's some practicality there, yeah.
Mari in Berkeley, please join us.
Hi, I was wondering if you had talked about the communal hot tubs that used to exist in Berkeley. When I came into Cal in the fall of 1987, I was taken to a couple of hot tubs. They were in people's backyards on the south side of campus, and you sort of had to be in the know and know the code to get into the backyard. And then it was basically you had to go nude, and it was a fantastic thing that existed back then, and I thought it was deeply Berkeley.
Okay, that sounds dangerous. No, it sounds fun and dangerous. Thanks for the call, Mari. And I have a couple more comments to write. Marjorie writes, when Malcolm X Elementary School switched to a K-5 elementary school, the new community set about creating a school garden. Sculptor Mark Bullwinkle stepped up to work with the young kids, creating metallic sculptures based on second graders' drawings that now adorn the garden. It's at Ella Street off Ashby. Check it out. Megan writes, and we're going to get to some of the changes happening in Berkeley. I live down the street from a building called The Village, which is home to many longtime local businesses. Fondue Fred's, Fine Ethiopian. The building is so unique. Wooden staircases, winding wrought iron, morning glory sculptures, stained glass windows. This building is scheduled to be demolished and replaced with a Borg-like block apartment building. It is heartbreaking to see Berkeley being stripped of its character, turning our city into a high-rise suburb. Could you please talk about The Village? This is a pretty well-known place on Telegraph Avenue, Fondue Fred's, one of the cheapest dinners you can get.
I've written about it. It was CJ's old garage. It was in right next door. And I love any place that's known as what it used to be. The village was built in the early 70s by a combination. Mostly people from the Berkeley Free Church and hippies built it, and not union carpenters. That was noted at the time. And it is a one-off. It's extremely charming. There are little pocket malls that are doing very well. Walnut Square is one. There's several others, but the city, in its wisdom, has decided that something bigger will go there. And I think that that battle has been lost, but it is an extremely charming, soon to be gone.
So check it out while it's still
yes.
there. We've been talking with Tom Dalzell, author of Quirky Berkeley. A reminder that he'll be giving a reading at Book Passage at the San Francisco Ferry Building this coming Monday at 6 p.m. Tom, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
And thanks to Doug Heine and Marcia Donahue, Berkeley artists. And thank you, our audience, for joining us. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai with help from Jeremy Siegel. And we get online support from Amanda Font. Our interns are Brandon Yu and Maxine Schofer-Wolf. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. And our executive producer is Joanne Wallace. I'm Dan Brecke, in for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.